Test 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3.
Test 1, 2, 3. Test 1, 2, 3.
Facebook Live right away. Just start it with opening show, Tim Andrews, President Tim Andrews from Sculpt.
Watching the clouds roll away. Whoa,
whoa. Welcome to the Combat Radio Network. This is Three Men and a Microphone, recorded inside the Iron Mike Studio, located in the Military Exchange on Route 332 in Canandaigua. Three Men and a Microphone is an opinion show based on the ins and outs, the news, politics, and scuttlebutt about town and the city of Canandaigua. Beautiful, historical Canandaigua, New York, where the hops grow higher, the grapes grow sweeter, and the sun always shines. In conjunction with 1310 AM, Canandaigua. Three men and a microphone, all the way from Rochester to Geneva, New York. I am your host, Corporal Tim Thornton, and this is Three Men and a Microphone. And we'll be right back after these messages.
Can I get a drink? Sumatra, pull down the shades. Maduro, lock the door. We're gonna party. Can you hear me? How long I've been on? Welcome! Enlisted and officers, WMs and Devil Dogs, I, Corporal Tim Thornton, your host for tonight. This is the DD214 and Laurel Cigar Lounge, fresh from the Dominican Republic, Hector Mono Cigars, here at the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York. Smoking lamp is out.
Welcome to Canandaigua 1310 WOKR, and this is Civil War Radio. Can I tell you something? Got to tell you one thing. If you expect the freedom that you say is yours, prove to me that you deserve it. Help us to preserve it, or being free will just be words and nothing more. Good morning. This is Civil War Radio, and we are here today with President Tim Andrews from SCOPE, Shooters Committee on Political Education, and it is going to be a bang-up show. Stay tuned. Watch us on Facebook. We have a very special guest coming in at 8:30. You're not going to believe who. And, yes, I do realize it's radio, but we are on Facebook Live. Mr. President Tim Andrews, how are you today, sir?
Good. How are you, Tim?
Like how I... Mr. President Tim Andrews.
I've been called plenty worse, so...
So lots going on in the news today. Everything's set in precedent. You know, we do this Second Amendment type of show. Well, you do the Second Amendment show. We do a constitutional show called Civil War Radio. And everything that's happening right now is testing those amendments.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no question that the Second Amendment is under attack big time today. And you look at it. This year, going into the legislative session in Washington, we were looking at national reciprocity probably getting passed. It did get passed in the Congress, but it's now stalled in the Senate. And I think one of the reasons is what's going on around the country and what's happening right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think it's important that the debate be framed properly. Obviously, I'm from SCOPE. We're a gun organization. We defend the Second Amendment rights of people who own firearms. But first and foremost, what that right's really about is a person's right to protect themselves. And that's where this discussion probably really should be framed first and foremost. That's what the Second Amendment was about. That's what the Founding Fathers intended it for. And people shouldn't forget that, that truly that's what this is about. You know, not all of us are MMA fighters. If we were confronted by someone out in the street or someone were to knock our front door down in the house, not everybody's going to be in a position physically to defend themselves, you know. whether you be an elderly person, a woman, or whoever. And a firearm obviously is that great equalizer that puts things in your favor a little bit to defend yourself. And, you know, we don't advocate, if you don't want to carry a firearm, you don't want to own a firearm in your house, that's certainly your right. You have every right to make that decision. And your decision, that's the key word here. It should be your decision and not government's. And that's where we're coming from here. And this is where we think most people should, how most people should look at this, because there probably are people out there who probably have no interest in a gun, don't want one in their house for whatever reasons. But I hate to tell you how many times over the years I've run into someone who once felt that way, had something occur in their, to themselves or someone in their family, and they changed their mind. And that's where all this lies. That then becomes your decision as to whether you want to bring a firearm in your house. Us at Scope, if you're someone out there who wants a firearm, you're uncomfortable with it, you've never been around firearms before, you know, contact us. We're more than happy to, you know, connect you up with someone who's a certified instructor that would take you out, teach you, and show you some of the fundamentals of firearm ownership and such. And I think that's important, where that the debate should be framed on that, that this is about being able to have the ability to protect yourself.
I agree. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So what topics do you have for us today?
Well, you know, we'll talk, you know, the interesting thing going on now, of course, is the March for Lives in Washington we had a week ago that you know, was given birth by the Parkland shootings that took place down in Florida. We've got some issues here in New York State. Governor Cuomo just passed legislation, domestic violence legislation. Again, the problem we have fundamentally with that is that it's all about due process rights. Whether we're talking the SAFE Act or whether we're talking the domestic violence legislation that Cuomo signed this week, we obviously don't want firearms in the hands of someone who's dangerous, who's violent, or criminals in particular. But everyone deserves their day in court. Everybody deserves due process, and firearms shouldn't be taken away arbitrarily by someone who hasn't been allowed that due process. And that's fundamentally where we have a disagreement with this particular piece of legislation having to do with domestic violence, is that it does take away due process rights. Even criminals have due process rights. Law-abiding gun owners in New York don't. And that's what we've seen with the SAFE Act, and that's what we see with the domestic violence bill that was signed this week in Albany. If another thing I want to point out, too, is if you look at these demonstrations, the march in Albany a week or so ago, David Hoag is the one student in particular that's become the media darling. He's been on CNN and several other stations, and he's been very outspoken for gun control. And it gives you an idea where we are in this discussion, is that obviously the media is not on the side. The media has chosen sides in this particular debate on gun control. And let's call it gun control. It's not gun safety, as many gun prohibitionists want to refer to this as gun safety legislation. It's not. It's gun control. That's what this is all fundamentally about. But you had to say this David Hoag, the student down there in Florida, he's been used quite a bit by the media. Believe it or not, there are students from Parkland School who have taken the opposite position, or pro-Second Amendment students who have tried to speak out. One student in particular, when they was scheduled to appear on CNN, when they found out what his position was and what he was going to say, they denied him the right to appear on CNN. So there's clearly an agenda there. CNN is not an objective news source. They have an agenda, and that's essentially what they're trying to put forth with this. When we talk about protecting oneself, the interesting thing, and it's all from perspective how you look at something, but when you look at the Parkland shooting, when you look at what occurred down there, if there's ever been a case about where it's up to you first and foremost to protect yourself or to defend yourself, it's the Parkland case. Here we have police reported four cops that stood outside the building when the gunfire was going on inside the building and never came in to defend those students. But beyond those four officers, that school district in Florida failed those kids. There were plenty of red flags that came up about Cruz, the shooter. Multitude of them. I mean, it was just countless. It's incredible how many red flags were there and were ignored. And he was eventually expelled from the school. but nothing was ever followed. Mental health issues that were out there that should have been picked up. And even you can lay this on the doorstep of the FBI in the NICS instant background check system. There should have been something there that would have prevented him from buying a firearm. Because, again, from our perspective, we know that there are people out there who shouldn't have firearms. They should not be allowed to buy them. Whether it's SCOPE or the NRA, no one has ever disputed that fact. And the NICS system was supposed to address that. That came up a few weeks ago because Cuomo was looking at changing the waiting period in the NICS system. When a NICS system came up and it wasn't necessarily approved or denied, the FBI has 3 days now in which to investigate that and get back with the potential buyer and tell them whether or not they're able to purchase a firearm or not. The governor here wanted to extend that to 10 days. I was interviewed by a couple of news sources over the last couple of weeks regarding this, and I was asked the question. I said, well, look, I said, you know, I can go online and apply for a credit card. And within minutes, I'll get a notice either I've been approved or not approved for the credit card. It doesn't take long at all. Anybody's had that experience, play for a credit card online, you know what I'm talking about. No reason that can't be done with the NICS system. And in the NICS check, you know, the second letter in the acronym, the I, stands for instant. And that was what that was intended to be with the NICS check. The NICS check's only as good as the information goes into it. And we've seen failures on the part of government. We've seen failure on the part of the government in the Texas church shooting, where the individual was eventually taken down by a certified NRA instructor with an AR-15. That individual, if you remember, was dishonorably discharged from the Air Force. The Air Force and the Department of Defense never got the appropriate information in the NICS system, and that's where that failure took place. And that individual who should have been able to purchase a firearm was able to purchase one. So there's no way that law-abiding citizens should pay for the incompetence of their government. You know, if we were dealing in business, and I'm sure I've never worked for a credit card company, but it's in their best interest to get accurate information and get that credit card to you as quick as you can. That's how they make their money. In the case of our safety and the safety of law-abiding citizens, it's incumbent on government to use the NICS system properly, get the information in it to protect people. And the answer, and this is the irony of ironies, and you know, one of the sad things I've seen with the gun debate over the years is that whenever one of these things happens, the entire focus seems to be on firearms. The entire focus is on guns. What can we do? You know, we got to ban guns. We got to get rid of AR-15s. And I won't use the term they use, but they basically want to ban semi-automatic firearms. And the interesting thing is, we come up with some legislation like that. We'll ban bump stocks or we'll ban something, and everybody walks away from the table, and that's it. Until it happens again. And it will happen again.
Well, it did happen the other day with a YouTube lady, the PETA activist.
Exactly. And then we're back to the same thing again. So, you know, we need to look at mental health issues in this country. We've closed mental health facilities in this country over the last 15, 20 years. Cuomo has just closed some facilities over the last probably 5 years of his terms. We've closed facilities. We've made it more difficult for people with mental health issues to get treatment. And that's where a lot of this focus needs to be. Almost every one of these people who are involved in stuff like this have mental health issues. And they're falling between the cracks, and that's what we have. But we become diverted by gun issues instead of really looking at the source of the problem. In fact, just the other day, there was a story out that the city of London, England, surpassed New York City in murder rate. And here's a country that has very strict gun control, and yet they have more murders than New York City does. Well, why is that? Is it have anything to do with the weapon? No, it has to do with what's in people's heads, what's in people's hearts. Where are people? Do they value human life? That's what causes murders. A firearm is just a tool. So is a knife. To me, that's just more anecdotal evidence out there of what the source of murder. Murders existed since Cain and Abel. It's always been there. Yeah, you know, it's not like murder was something that was invented when the firearm was. It existed far before that. We've got to look at people and address the people out there who shouldn't have firearms, and we need treatment for people who have issues. The interesting thing is when you look at a lot of these mass murders, many of the people who do them tend to be liberals, tend to be, you know, well, definitely the young lady out in California is a good example of that, you know, and we probably won't hear more about that. I'll tell you another thing, I think, with the issue, too, when you look at it. I really think there's a possibility when you look at where the arguments are being made that the gun control movement could even be considered racist. I dare say if the opposite were done and we were to do that, what they're doing, we wouldn't look at it. What do I mean by that? Well, look at the shooting in Parkland. Who were the people they put up front? David Hogue, a few other white kids that went to a primarily, I guess, suburban school in Florida, where most of the murders committed in this country are committed in minority communities, where Hispanics and blacks are far more Hispanics and blacks killed in this country, murdered in this country, than there are white kids. Yeah, how much of that do you hear? And I'll tell you why you don't hear it much is because those black kids aren't being murdered by semi-automatic rifles. Okay, they're being murdered with handguns. Well,
illegal handguns
that aren't owned legally. There's a reason that they don't pursue that is because if you look at surveys in the country, overwhelmingly most Americans feel you have the right to own a handgun to protect yourself. Do you remember at one time the gun control group, Handgun Control? There's a reason they changed their name, because they knew most Americans, no way do they favor, you know, people not having the right to own a handgun to protect themselves. But, and I dare say when you look at the situation, city of Chicago is the one we hear the most about. Most of those kids, overwhelmingly, are minorities. And they're killed with handguns, illegal handguns, as you point out. But again, it's not the problem with the handgun. It's the fact that in society to today, we no longer value human life. I always use the example, when I grew up as a teenager, I grew up in the city of Rochester. I had a .22 rifle and a 12-gauge bolt-action Marlin shotgun in my bedroom closet when I was in high school. Many of my friends had the same thing. We were just like every other teenager. We had our share of battles and fights and disagreements. I don't remember any of us ever thinking about going home and getting one of those rifles or the shotgun out of the closet and going back and shooting somebody. It was just a non-existent thought. It just didn't happen. Back in the 60s, I grew up in what was called the old 10th Ward in the city of Rochester. In the area, there was the old Emerson Street landfill. It's the area off Emerson Street in the city, where you got Edison Tech High School now. But back then, it was a landfill. We used to go over here as kids with our 22s and shoot rats with our rifles. We used to walk down the city street, Emerson Street, with our 22s in hand. And once in a while, I only had one instance where a cop pulled over, and the only thing he asked me is that loaded? And I says, no. And I told him, he asked me what I was doing. Okay, fine. And just be careful. Be safe. Can you imagine that in the city today? So the culture has changed. The thinking has changed. The problem is not firearms. And again, the London situation. You can do away with firearms. You're not going to do away with murder. It's still going to occur. The weapon might change, but the murder is still going to occur. And if you have a loved one that's murdered, and it's not going to matter much to you whether he was murdered with a gun or a knife. It doesn't matter, or a bomb, or whatever. We've got to look at our culture, and until we do address that, sincerely address that, these problems are going to continue.
And, absolutely.
Yeah.
Any more good points?
Well,
I thought you said something about strategy or tactics.
Well, it depends if you're talking about, well, you know, I would say that a good example, if you're looking at tactics or strategy, it depends on whether we're talking politics or shooting. But I bring this up when we talk about the shooting out in Vegas, and people talk about bump stocks and they talk about semi-automatic. I says, you know, the greatest advantage that individual created for himself was his tactical position. He put himself in a good location where he could do the most damage. I've said to people, you know, he could have been up there with any type of a lever-action rifle and done pretty much the same damage as he did with the AR-15. He just had a good tactical position. He had trouble locating where he was when this started. And, you know, before they could eventually get to him, he had a lot of time to do a lot of damage. And that's probably the greatest – that was more beneficial to him than the firearm he used. And –
you know, the officers staying outside. We're talking about Parkland, right?
Yeah.
And the officers staying outside, four to five of them. I have to see the whole picture, but what amazes me is that they didn't control the exits. Mm-hmm. And the shooter, Cruz, walked out with the other kids, went down the road, and had lunch at McDonald's. I mean, if it wasn't bad enough what the resource officer did,
yeah,
or what the sheriffs that showed up did, but they didn't even contain it, he could have walked down the road and done even more damage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, horrible.
Yeah.
Absolutely horrible strategy.
The other thing we're looking at, you got when you look at that situation there, as far from a gun owner's perspective, we're dealing with Michael Bloomberg and his millions of dollars. That's we're fighting down there. I've heard stories of the march in Albany, or excuse me, Washington, where you had, you know, kids showing up at local restaurants with a $5 and a $10 bill stapled together that somebody had given to them for lunch that day. So this has been well organized. If you look at that, this wasn't a bunch of high school kids that got together and said, "Hey, let's have a march on Washington." Anybody who thinks that is kidding themselves. These kids are being used, are being manipulated. And when we talk about cultural issues, you have to ask yourself this. If a pro-gun group of kids got together and said, "Hey, we want to march on City Hall or Albany or Washington and have a march and demonstrate for the Second Amendment," would those same schools allow those kids out of school to go do that?
Oh, no.
You know, I'll give you, I don't have the answer to that. I don't know if they would or not, but wouldn't it be interesting to find out? My bet is they wouldn't.
Well, that's my point. It's not gun safety, in my opinion, because I have children that are in school. To me, it's school safety issues. Because if you're going to allow my child to walk out of school for any kind of demonstration, who's going to guarantee that they're going to be safe during that demonstration?
Mm-hmm.
They're there for a reason. That's your responsibility as a school system to ensure my safety of my child while they're present. It doesn't give them any right to walk out and demonstrate, or even walk out to even go down to Dunkin' Donuts to get a cup of coffee or something. You know, you're responsible for my child during that time.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, but their agenda is more important than that. And one of the issues they deal with in our culture is what our kids are learning in school and what they are being taught. And, you know, if they want to have a legitimate, honest debate on the gun issue in a high school, I've got no problem with that. That's fine. That's a good place for it, or in a college, what have you. But the schools should be playing this down the middle when it comes to this. It is a legitimate issue to have a discussion and debate about, but it should be played down the middle. And it's definitely not happening. That's why, you know, we're looking at today. Who knows what we're going to be facing in 15, 20 years from now when these kids that are in school today are going to be the ones running the country? Is there going to be a Second Amendment anymore? Because the whole line of thinking could be totally different. And that's something folks should be concerned about, because history shows that crime doesn't disappear because you ban guns. The only thing it's going to do is guarantee the only people who have guns are criminals. If you go back, want to go back in our history, when alcohol was banned, when Prohibition came about, did alcohol disappear? Absolutely not. And it was a constitutional amendment against it, but yet alcohol didn't disappear. The only one who had alcohol? The criminals did. The criminals made a lot of money off of it, okay? Law-abiding citizens didn't, but criminals did. And that's all this will do.
Political brainwashing, and the youth of our times are being used as their political venue for their agenda. That's all it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all part of the agenda. Again, I go back to the fact we have a debate on semi-automatic firearms, specifically semi-automatic rifles. And rifles in general, all rifles are only used in 4% of the crimes in America. So why is the focus on rifles? I mean, if you really wanted to have an impact, wouldn't you look at other things besides rifles? Because it's really a small part of it. And again, as I mentioned before, the focus isn't on handguns because most Americans think you should have handguns. But mind you this, if they're successful in banning semi-automatic rifles, and by the way, semi-automatic rifles, they want to do the eventual goal here is to do away with all semi-automatic firearms. I don't care if it's a rifle, I don't care if it's a Remington 1100 shotgun. They eventually want to go down that road too, and don't kid yourself, this isn't all about AR-15s. and AK-47s. This is about all semi-automatic rifles. But next on the agenda is handguns. They eventually change the culture to the point where handguns will be a target. And don't kid yourself there. This is about all guns eventually is where it's going to go.
Well, you mentioned the mental health issue. Do you realize that we have an opiate crisis on our hand as well amongst teenagers? And that's another program at school that they got rid of was the D.A.R.E. program. So not only do you have children that with mental health issues, you have children that aren't being educated on the health risk of doing drugs and alcohol.
Right, and the interesting thing with that is if you look at a lot of the violence in our cities, a lot of the source of that is drugs. Do away with drugs, you do away with probably most of the crime in this country.
Exactly.
If you want to impact crime, if you want to impact murders and violence in our cities, do something about drugs. But you see, the problem is dealing with drugs is a lot more difficult issue. It's just like mental health issues. It's a lot more complicated. It's a lot more difficult to deal with.
Well, I think the government needs to start realizing where their money should be well spent, and it's not on getting rid of guns and changing the Second Amendment. It starts with educating your children, building up a school system where they, you know, for the school safety, and teaching them the drug awareness and alcohol awareness, because it all starts, it takes a village to raise a child.
We've heard that before, but we don't want to say where from.
I know. But it's true, because a lot of the parents want to be friends nowadays, and I don't care if you're inner city or out in the suburbs, children are not your friends. You have a child for a reason. You have friends for a reason at your age. And start teaching your child ethics, right and wrong, and it all begins at home. And if it's not going to do it, then let the village, a.k.a. the school system, do it.
Yeah, I think that goes back to a cultural change in our country, and lending to what you just said, is that, you know, what's lacking in a lot of homes today, the nuclear family has been undermined. I had a father at home when I was a kid.
I think religion is lacking.
I think families. The biggest thing is when I was a kid growing up was having my dad at home, and having my dad there to pay attention to what I was doing and to discipline me when I needed it. And you lack that in a lot of these homes today with kids.
Thanks very much. That's Tim Andrews, President Tim Andrews from Scope. And we're out of time. And could you tell everybody how to get a hold of you?
Yeah, that's good. I'll tell you what. This is a big year for gun owners. The attacks are, I think, unparalleled right now. We need involvement. The most frustrating thing from my end is I don't think a lot of people out there recognize that how tenuous their rights are right now and how easy it is going to be to lose them, especially here in New York. So we need people involved. So if you need help, anything having to do with this, or if you want to help out, learn more about Scope, I would recommend you go to the Scope website. And that's at scopeny.org. You can call us on the phone if you have questions. Our phone number is 315-277-2673. Either way, get a hold of us, and you know, we'll help you in any way we can. Hopefully we can count on help from folks out there to kind of turn the tide here in New York, because it's a big year for us. It really is.
That's great. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you.
Honey, how many times do I have to move your old army bag? It's taking up too much room in the closet.
It's a duffel bag. It's full of my old uniforms.
And are you going to wear them again?
Yeah, maybe. Someday.
Uh-huh. And what size do you wear now?
Whatever.
Honey, why don't you take them to Military Mike's? You're certainly there enough.
It's Iron Mike's, and at least he doesn't make comments about my weight.
Bring your old military gear down to Iron Mike's Military Exchange. They'll turn your old uniforms, gear, and military collectibles into cash. So if you drug it back from overseas and it doesn't fit your motif, we want it. Iron Mike's wants your Class A, Alphas, Hammies, Fatigues, Utilities, Digis. We want your Deuce gear, Molly gear, Alice gear, Web gear. Bring in your Poly Pro, new boots, used boots. Heck, if it's green, camouflaged, or digital, we want it. Give it a good home. Use pre-enjoyed. Iron Mike's has a bin for it. Iron Mike's buys, sells, and trades. Iron Mike's Military Exchange, located in Canandaigua, New York. Check out all their newly acquired items at militaryexchange.co.
Springtime weather forecast. Rainy, gray skies with a slight chill in the a.m. Tactical to practical. Military rain gear on sale now at the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York. Camouflage rubber rain pants. USGI issue only $19.99.
The Military Exchange.
Okay, welcome back to Three Men and a Microphone. This is Corporal Tim Thornton, and I'm here with Melissa Walker and Armin Marinetti. And this is our interview with Mr. John Trellini from Wildlife Rockstars. He's got my old buddy Lance with him, and we have a special guest named Penny.
That's right.
And if you're at home and you're listening to this and you're saying, what are you going to do, Tim, with a special guest that you want us to see, but it's radio, then I say go to Facebook Live and look at the video, and you'll get a kick out of what we're doing today. John, how are you, sir?
Very good. Thanks
for
having us.
Very good to have you back.
Yeah, it's nice to get reacquainted. It's been a while.
Yes.
We used to be neighbors.
We used to be neighbors, and you've been on my show before.
Yeah,
Lance has
right.
been on the show before.
Yeah.
Lance, you're looking great, man.
You too, Mike, and it is great to be back. And like I was telling you earlier, your place looks terrific.
Oh, come right up to the mic.
Oh. Just great to be back again, Mike. It's good to see you.
It is very good to see you, too.
Yeah.
Now, so tell us about Wildlife Rockstars and what you guys are doing today.
Yeah. Well, it's not many people that can say what we do, and the program that we have is the only program like it in all of North America. There's no one doing anything even remotely like this, and we're pretty excited about that. It's been 10 years in. As I said, we used to be neighbors. We started 10 years ago on Monday, June 2nd, 2008, with an idea. I'll never forget walking into the office. We didn't have phones. We didn't have desks. Our executive director and I were dumpster diving for furniture 10 years ago, and now here we are now. I mean, we are a $1 million company. Last year we did 400 educational outreach programs. So we really do it frequently. Today we're up at the Rochester Museum and Science Center. So what we are is a unique wildlife education program, and we've really become the Rochester's premier educational program. I used to say that and hope it was true. Now I say that and I know it's true. All roads lead to us. And we're out in the community on a regular basis, not only doing amazing wildlife education, sharing our amazing animal ambassadors that you're about to see with especially school-age children, encouraging them to reuse, reduce, recycle, be the future stewards of the environment. But what happens is much, much more. The presenters of our program are all adults recovering from traumatic brain injury, and they use running this business with us as part of their rehabilitation. They're working on personal goals, and they're using it as a way to get back into the community and, as Lance calls it, rejoin the tribe. And actually, Lance, you should speak to that a little bit because you're a little closer to it than I am, really, how the people use this to kind of regain something they lost.
That's exactly what it's about. I mean, people want to know if we rescue animals. And we do find ourselves doing more and more animal rescues occasionally. But really, our program is about rescuing the people out there. You know, yeah, taking back a little bit of what was taken from you. I mean, doctors, they can patch you up, and there's so many good rehabilitative programs out there. But what Bridges with Brain Injury does is, well, it's like John said, it helps you rebuild your confidence, your self-esteem, get back into the community whilst giving to the community.
And really, the power of the program, and for anyone interested in experiencing the power of the Wildlife Rockstars, we opened our third office. We have our main office is in Farmington. Our second office is down in the southern tier in Elmira. And then we opened our third office at the Rochester Museum and Science Center, which is everything
I personally and we as an agency ever dreamed of. So here we have an open office at the Rochester Museum and Science Center. We appear there every Saturday in Bausch Auditorium doing educational shows at 11:30 and 1:30. And the museum has told us that we're the most successful outside program in the history of the museum. Yesterday there were issues. I mean, standing room only in the auditorium. There's issues with people trying to save seats, and there's people going to both shows, and it's been a huge success for us. Because the piece of it that is difficult to understand unless you're there is that there's so much more going on than the wildlife education. There's a greater purpose. You know, school-age children especially, what we're doing is literally thrusting adults with disabilities in front of the community as role models and as people that have something to contribute. So even though they've suffered a tragedy and risen from it to triumph, there's a message of that you can overcome anything you put your mind to. And these people have proven it. Lance has proven it. You know, do you want to speak to that at all? Or, I mean, just some of the stories, Lance, are amazing.
It's all a work in progress, as always. But, I mean, all of our... All of our success is because it is a team effort. You know, it's not a one-man show. I mean, I have a story out there, but every single one of our program members, you know, they're titans. You know, it demonstrates exactly what true strength is and courage. You know, it's hard to get up there and out there and expose yourself to a world that you felt overexposed to before. And so it's all tales of inspiration and hope.
Yeah, as Lance says, it's every individual that attends the program is a miracle within themselves. You know, we have people that suffered catastrophic car accidents, and after their body healed, their heart, mind, and soul didn't heal. And they remain in their home for a year, maybe, without going outside because they couldn't bear to do so. And what this program does is gives them the confidence to go out in the community and be part of something that's greater than themselves and to be viewed in a different way than being bent or broken. I mean, today at the Rochester Museum and Science Center, the hundreds of patrons that walk through the doors will see our people, and our people are the educators. They're educating the public, and that's very powerful. What comes from that is very powerful. So it kind of has it coming from all directions. I mean, on the very surface, We've got our animals are amazing. All of our animals have appeared on the Rachel Ray Show, CBS Early Show, Good Morning America, Steve Harvey in Chicago. I could go on and on. They're highly trained. We have a very qualified staff. Lori Stallman, our wildlife education coordinator, is here today. Our presenters are amazing. People are learning fascinating facts from these very well-trained animal ambassadors. When you see one of our shows, you're going to see an animal that you never laid eyes on before, and you never will again unless you see it from us. We have the rarest, the finest, the most well-adjusted animal ambassadors you could imagine. Then it's got it coming from these people are working on themselves. They're rehabilitating, but the work they're putting in isn't in isolation. They're contributing back to the community while they're improving themselves. And that's really kind of the beauty of the whole program, is that their work that they're putting in, the diligence and the effort, isn't just done in a cocoon. It's done in a manner that the community gets to benefit from it. And it's inspiring. I mean, even when some of our presenters, when they begin, their voice quivers and they mispronounce a couple words, and you might even see that their knees wobble. But what happens is the audience gets behind them, and when they work their way through, it's an experience for the audience beyond the fact that they've just seen amazing animals. They feel they've just seen an amazing person, too. You really get to know the people. So it's pretty special. I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it. I always will, I guess.
Very inspiring words, the way you're saying it, John.
Yeah, thank you.
So can we meet Penny?
Yeah, let's do that. This is Penny. Lance, you want to talk about Penny a little bit?
Yeah. Why don't you go ahead and scoot next to the drizzle, and I'll speak over here. All right, who we have with us today is one of our favorites. This is an adult gray female kangaroo named Penny. Now, usually the grays are very, very large kangaroos. Like, if she were a boy, she would be double that size. They can get between 6 and 8 feet in height and up to a couple hundred pounds. Now, kangaroos are a delight to work with. They're a very social, very gregarious animal. They enjoy being around each other, they enjoy their species, and they enjoy being around people as well. But I gotta tell you, when it comes to fight or flight, these guys are runners. They are jumpers and gunners, and they are really built for bounce. They bounce out at somewhere between 50 and 60 miles an hour. They have close to a 9-foot vertical leap on them, and a distance bound of between 15 and 20 feet. If they really want to get going,
she's so I don't know how to say it. She's just very patient. She's just sitting there. She's not really
very
looking,
well adapted.
She's not really looking at the camera.
Right.
But,
this is what they do for a living, and you can tell she's comfortable now. You know, these guys are known as macropods. You can see those insane feet. You know, everything touching the floor over there. That's all just foot. And they can kick hard. Hard enough to eviscerate a lion. Yeah, they kick stronger than horses.
Now, how is it if someone like me, complete outsider, who may have the smell of a dog on him, if I went up and met her?
The trick is, and Lori Stallman, again, I want to bring her up again because she's kind of the mother to all the animals, and she's in charge of the husbandry of the animals, which means not only feeding them, cleaning them, training them, enriching them, and being sure they're adjusted in the community. And so we put a lot of time into it. You don't just normally get this. We got a kangaroo in your shop.
I know, right? Yeah. There's a kangaroo in the middle of Iron Mike. Military exchange.
And she's chill.
Right. She's very calm.
Calm and relaxed. Yeah. And that comes from all the work that Lori and our wildlife staff have put into her. She's been exposed to everything you can possibly imagine. You know what Lori did with her this past year? We had a arcade railroad had a train trip they were doing, and they wanted to have a kangaroo on the train. We took her on the train. I mean, clickety-clack down the road, swaying, breeze rolling through, the trees whizzing by, and she just sat there just like she is now right on the train. She's been exposed to new and novel situations her whole life. Babies crying, dogs barking, glass breaking, cars backfiring. That's what she's...
Yeah, in dog obedience, you test dogs, not with all of that, but people standing around, other dogs around, and they're supposed to ignore them.
Yeah.
And stay focused.
Yeah. So we always say she doesn't know she's a kangaroo, but we don't know if it's that or she thinks we're all kangaroos. I mean, one or the other, but you see how she's just totally, like, completely relaxed. You can go up and pet her. I mean, she loves to be...
Can I come around?
Yeah.
How old is she again?
She is about 2.5 years out of pouch because they have an interesting reproductive system. They're marsupials, so the young are birthed about the size of a peanut, and they make that dangerous journey to the mother's pouch. And then in the mother's pouch, they attach themselves, and there's where they remain for up to 7 months before they emerge from the pouch. As a matter of fact, I was just talking to a friend of mine recently about baby, Lance, this would be true, right? A mother or female kangaroo always has 3 babies.
Correct. Yeah.
Right? One, they're watching over as it bounces around and feeds and carries on its business. That's baby number one. Baby number two is in the pouch. It's been born, and she's nurturing it and caring for it in the pouch. Baby three is...
Embryonic diet pause.
Yes. You want to... Really, come talk about that. Come talk about that. It's in... They have a baby in suspended animation, basically, right?
Absolutely. All the time. It is one of the most unique and interesting...
I want him to film me.
reproductive systems on the planet. Yeah, that last baby is called an embryonic diapause. So, yeah, if something happens to the baby in the pouch, they can literally unfreeze the embryo inside themselves and start regestating.
Now, they nurse then.
They nurse, but it's inside the pouch. You know, really, that's the thing is a marsupial, usually people think, is an animal with a pouch. Really, it is that short gestation period. In other words, how long before the mama has the baby?
Yeah.
And if you're going to be a marsupial, then it's just a few weeks. The babies are born tiny, tiny.
Yeah. Thank you. That's awesome, Lance. That's a great fact that you have. It's not the pouch. Actually, Webster's Dictionary's definition of a marsupial is an animal who rears its young in a pouch. And what Lance just mentioned is that's not really true.
We've
because
worked with pouchless
there's
marsupials.
Pouchless marsupials. What makes a marsupial is the short gestation. Do you know that there's a mammal called, it's a short-tailed opossum, not possum, but opossum, a cousin to the one we see dead on the side of the road? Mm-hmm. You know what their gestation is? 11 days.
Interesting.
11 days, and they birth this little Joey that's the size of a grain of rice. It's a miracle. I mean, it's really, really amazing. And, you know, I also want to say, like, the reason we have Penny and our entire Wildlife Education Center is from support of the community. And specifically, we have the support of a wonderful woman that's very involved in the Canandaigua community. Her name is Marge Donhauser. And our Outdoor Wildlife Education Center is named after her. But so anyone that's heard this, and hopefully we've captured your interest, come see a show, because then we'll capture your hearts. What can you do for us? Like us on Facebook. I mean, please like us on Facebook. I think we're one like away this morning, I saw, from 2,400 likes. We're going to be at the in Victor this weekend, where you can come and see our Siberian lynx. We're going to be at the Kids Expo in Victor. We're all over. We're at the Rochester Museum and Science Center. Give us a like on Facebook and kind of join the ride, I guess.
That's great. Well, thanks, John. That's a very great interview. We appreciate you bringing Lance. I appreciate
always
you bringing
great to be
Penny.
Here, Mike.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you guys, and I hope everybody supports Wildlife Rockstars, which is a great name.
Thanks.
Thank you. We should do that on the air, too. Film this. We're not leaving yet. John Trulini makes beautiful jewelry. John, can you explain the jewelry?
Yeah, I mean, I make interesting wildlife-related jewelry. What we do, I mean, it's the ethical use of products, natural resources, I should say, and like no animals are harmed in the process. The things I use are from a natural attrition, a zoological institution, legal hunting, roadkill, et cetera, et cetera. And I brought a few things for you. So one is I brought you a couple. I brought you a bear tooth, a black bear tooth pendant that you can wear around a necklace, which is pretty cool. Look at that canine.
That's cool.
Is that crazy? And I want you to have that.
Thank you.
And then to go along with the canine, I have a bear claw. Look at the size of that claw.
Wow.
Again, to be worn as a...
Oh, yeah.
And you know, I wear them out of respect for the animal, and in tribute to the animal is the way I do them. So that's a bear claw that goes with it. This is a timber rattlesnake rattle pendant.
Oh, neat.
Oh, wow. I used to have a rattlesnake keychain I loved.
Did you? Yeah, that's a rattlesnake pendant, which is really cool.
Yeah,
that
is nice.
This is kind of different. Most people don't realize how long their teeth are. This is a beaver tooth.
Oh, my.
Is that crazy? Look at the size of it.
No wonder they can do...
Yeah, the damage they do, right?
That's just one tooth.
Yeah, that's just one tooth. This is a wolf canine wrapped in copper. This is one of my favorites. This is a badger claw. Boy, diggers, aren't they?
Yeah.
And this, which is pretty sweet too. This is a bison tooth.
Oh,
that represents
neat.
Bison. The bison represents good fortune and having something be plentiful. Unfortunately, that's not the case there. So dangerously.
It's very nice how you
endangered.
How you wrap the wire and you attach it to the to the tooth or claw.
Yeah, I like to keep busy, I guess. So
Well, that's a lot.
Yeah. I used to sell the stuff, and I would ended up kind of being a victim of my own success because I couldn't keep up with it. So now what I do is I make the stuff and I gift it to people, as I'm doing it to you here today. So it's just a lot of fun, and I'm happy for you to have these.
Well, it's a great gift. It's absolutely amazing.
Thank you.
I'm thinking in my head, how can I wear all of them at the same time?
Yeah.
that's probably what I want to do. I'm not sure how that would work out, but
yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And you know, you're doing a great job.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
We're trying.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Lance, my buddy.
See you, pal.
If we had time, I'd tell that story that I always tell about Lance. Do you remember that story? That's my favorite Lance story.
Which one?
We sat on the air last time you were on, and you were in a store before that, and I said, you came in with your eye patch, your hair was standing straight up, I think it was blonde, and you had a tank top on, you know, and you're a well-built guy, and you had these, like, cargo pants on, I think, and I said, you look like a man from the future, and you said, I am, well, no, you said, yeah, that's right, a guy from the future that can't remember why I'm here now, something like that. And I said, what a cool movie that would be.
Yeah.
You're from the future, but you don't know why you're here now.
I wish I remembered it. Awesome.
It was a great comeback. Thanks,
cool.
Lance.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Anytime
and
every time, old friend.
And thank you, Penny.
Yeah,
and,
thank you.
Lori.
Thanks for coming. Another tactical to practical moment has been brought to you by Iron Mike's Military Exchange. Camouflage netting was designed to cover up military buildings, tents, tanks, and artillery. Ah, but back stateside, at home, in your backyard, it's the perfect shade for the family patio or deck, or a dog kennel. It's a great blind for hunting duck and deer and to cover up that boat or tree stand. Perfect for a backstage drop for your next theatrical performance, or airsoft and paintball scenario games. Iron Mike's camouflage netting comes with or without reinforced net backing. 100% waterproof, rot and mold resistant. Quiet and rustle free, texture for a more natural look. UV and non-toxic treated to prevent glare and shine. Reversible for different color options to best fit the environment. Pliable even in extreme temperatures. Comes in several sizes. 10x10, 10x20, 8x10, 8x20, and 4x10. And camouflage netting comes in many colors. Woodland, desert, dead duck, snow, and many more. This tactical to practical moment was brought to you by Iron Mike's Military Exchange, located in Canandaigua.
Check them out online at ironmikes.co.
Ain't nobody's business if I do. Nobody's business.
Welcome back to Three Men and a Microphone, and we're going to have a little segment. I'm going to do the local news, and I hope you guys can comment as you will. Armin Marinetti, Melissa Walker, Corporal Tim Thornton, and this is Three Men and a Microphone local news. Strong winds slam the Finger Lakes up to 65 miles an hour. More than 17,000 customers, as much as 50,000 customers of RG&E and National Grid were without power across the western New York. In Route 96 in Victor, the road was closed because of a tree down on the road. That was last night, and Wegman's truck flipped over on the 390, and as of this morning's report, two more trucks had flipped over. Also, and that's our wind damage, there's a exit sign on exit 7 that says Mount Morris and Letch Roth Park. So I guess Mr. Roth bought the park for the Jewish Society there. I'm assuming.
Roth. I graduated from Mount Morris, so I think that's funny, Letch Roth.
Letch Roth.
From New York City, it's Letchworth.
Yeah, well, Tony Stewart and the parents of Kevin Ward Jr. are working on a settlement. And what I thought was interesting is the parents, the Wards, filed in federal court in Utica, New York, and they're hoping for a settlement like everybody else is in the world, which. I read the whole article, and you know, it's getting to be a very interesting civil case, but they're filing in federal court.
Why federal? If it's civil.
Well, it may not. Maybe it's not going to stay civil. April 4th marks the anniversary of civil rights leader Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. and his passing. And then we have a public hearing is set for Thursday evening on the A. Oh, this is what I was trying to do. I wanted to bring this up for you. On the A, B, and B's to have the same regulations as the B and B's. And I wanted to bring up this thing. I know we talked about it. This will be the third time. But there's a place on the internet called Lens of Liberty. And they have a different take, probably a very libertarian take, on the interference of the government on the A, B, and B's. And I don't know.
What's the A stand for? I'm not familiar with
it. Why do they call it Airbnb? So air bed and breakfast.
Air being that you can get it online? Is that, what's the air? Where's that
coming from? Isn't that where someone just rents out their room for a weekend or something?
Well, it must be because you fly in and then you rent a room, or I guess you drive in. I don't know why they call it.
I don't know.
Amazon is moving to Henrietta in a 70,000 square foot facility, and three families are now safe after an early fire on Bristol Street. Nobody was hurt, but one family's cat died. But they also talk about a fire on Bryce Street, where they found 30-plus cats in the basement.
Whoa. Mm.
And that's all in Victor.
Wow.
10 jobs added to Photonics in Farmington, and no criminal charges in the shooting of off-duty New York State parole officer Sandy Guardiola's. And the family is going to file a lawsuit and for wrongful death. And Sergeant Scott Cadian was deemed that he was justified in the shooting. And then I thought it was interesting that District Attorney Jim Ritz did his public speech about, not public speech, but his news answering to the news reporters on live Facebook, and it came across Facebook, the whole interview, and people are really using that now.
What do you think of Facebook? That you mentioned that the other trouble that they seem to be having with misuse of information.
They said something like 80 million people were given their information over to this analytics company, so it wasn't like the analytics company broke into the software and stole our information.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying that they knowingly sold that information.
Mm-hmm.
On 80, and Zuckerberg is going to be standing in front of Congress next week.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to have to explain why. Well, you know what I noticed though was he's on the air and on the news talking about, and he says, this is terrible, the responsibility that we have, we should have been able to control it better. And then he went on about world news. So he's in such a position of power at this point that he's not looking at it like, I have a business and I pulled out everybody's file and I sold off the, the information, or somehow they got the information. And he's looking at it as he is such a, not his words, but a power and an influence in the world and the things that we have to deal with. It may be a little bit of a misdirection, but he brought up world things that the world or United States people have to start thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook in other countries, they're not allowed to get away with what they get away with here. If I shared your comments, I broke some kind of privacy law in, say, Germany, and I would get arrested for that. In Canada and other places, if you do any kind of hate speech on Facebook, you get arrested or fined for that.
It's interesting that technology has brought us the World Wide Web and the internet. And I think about those two ending words, web and net. You ever see what a spider uses to catch its prey?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Quite an intricate web.
Yes.
Like a net.
Yes. So are we being captured by technology to the point where another storm goes through and blows out somebody's phone and computer, and let's say it doesn't get fixed in 5 hours. Let's say it takes 5 days. Will we have chaos in the streets? Will people lose their ability to function as a civil society?
Tune in every Saturday morning, 8 to 10 a.m., for three men and a microphone and a lady. Hear all about local news, politics, fishing report, and sports, as well as all the talk about town and the scuttlebutt in the city. To keep up on the show, stay connected and visit us on Facebook at Canandaigua 1310, Three Men and a Microphone. Presented each week, Saturday 8 to 10 a.m. and Sunday afternoons at 2 p.m. Sponsored by the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York. And to catch up on past episodes, go to IronMikesMX.com or WOKR 1310.